Comic Timing, proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 8 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as David Price and myself, Ian Levesey, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. This week, the lovely and talented Amy Lift from Jolly Old England returns as we tackle the most important question of all, why we buy comics. We also give our forum members takes on the issue at hand and announce a new affiliate of the show. Woo! Here now, the host of our show, myself, Ian Levinstein.
Hey there, folks. We're back. Just when you thought you could get rid of us, we're back. It's Comic Timing. It's episode number 8, and we are ready to roll here once again, live from all over the world once more. That's right. We've got Amy Lift back, and she is our first return guest.
Well, hey!
Yay!
Yay! And joining us, as always, is the man of a thousand podcasts. He is David Price.
Hello, everyone.
Now, Amy, I have to say, you are back for two reasons. Number one, because we love what you say, and number two, because your episode as of now is the most downloaded episode of Comic Timing.
You're joking.
I joke not.
And true to form, we love a gimmick, so we're going to have you back.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'm going bright red now, so I'll just...
Well, pretty soon we're going to do a gimmick that Marvel did a little while ago. We're going to have an all-silent episode, so... No text whatsoever, no speaking whatsoever.
Just subtitles.
Exactly, just subtitles. And subtitles in podcasts is kind of hard to do, so I think we'd be the first of a kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's stop our super happiness right now and get rolling here with the actual topic of the show. Hey, how about that? What we're going to be talking about today is, why do you buy? It's a nice, simple question, but it can be pretty difficult at times. Mostly, read this actually straight from David's mouth, actually, as he posted it on the forums.
Or my keyboard.
Your keyboard, yeah, exactly. Do you follow the characters? Do you follow the creators? If the creator moves to another publisher, i.e. Ed Brubaker, do you follow him or throw your hands in the air frustrated that he left DC? Do you buy every single thing Warren Ellis writes, regardless of the artist, company, or characters? Must you obtain every single Flash, Doctor Strange, or Savage Dragon appearance? Let us know, and we'll read the comments on the show like we did. Or, as always, you can send us an email over at comictiming@gmail.com. Well, let me ask the panelists first. David, why do you buy?
That depends. I buy because of... It's come back full circle. I buy now again because of the characters, I think. I follow certain creators, but... there are some characters that I will stick with. If I look out and a favorite creator of mine is working on one of my favorite characters, super. It can go either way, but for the most part, I say the character.
Okay, so you're more of a character-driven guy.
I think so.
Okay, that works. How about you, Amy? Why do you buy?
I buy mainly for characters, to be honest. I follow what some writers do. It's like I keep an eye on what titles Warren Ellis is doing and whether they'd interest me, but I tend to follow characters, and I follow artists in the same way that I follow writers. I'll look what they're doing, and if it's something I'm interested in, I'll pick it up.
Well, I'm pretty much the same way when I think about it. I mean, there have been a couple of books that I've stopped picking up because a particular writer or a particular artist was on the book because I just didn't like their style, but most of the time, if I like a character, I'm going to stick with them. An example here, I guess, would be, well, since I've mentioned him on a previous podcast, I might as well mention him again, Kyle Rayner. Wherever Kyle Rayner goes, chances are I'm going to be picking up that book. So Green Lantern Corps I picked up, I'm picking up Ion right now. When he guest stars in other books, I usually end up picking those up because I'm a huge fan of the character. Yes, David, I'm a fan of the character. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We all have to start somewhere.
I tease. But and I'm sure you're the same way with Hal, you know?
Yes, I am, which is the character I thought of when I was trying to determine if it's a character or a creator. It doesn't matter. I mean, I wasn't around when he was the Spectre. I kind of left when he went nuts and that whole final night thing that, you know, led up to him being the Spectre, things like that. But doesn't matter who's writing or drawing the character now and over the past few years, I'll buy Hal Jordan.
So there have been instances, however, though, I mean, as you just mentioned with the Spectre thing and all that, there have been instances where you've been driven away from a character because of the
writing.
Right,
but that was, well, no, it wasn't because of the writing so much as the change in the character. It was, at that point, I guess you could say, was the character that drove me away. You know, I didn't see him as the Spectre. So then we can say that I'm a fan of Hal Jordan as Green Lantern. Okay. Not Hal Jordan as Parallax, not Hal Jordan as Spectre, not Hal Jordan as, you know, really anybody other than Green Lantern.
Well, would you pick up let's say if there's a special that comes out that's just Hal Jordan, no Green Lantern costume whatsoever, just the character of Hal Jordan, would you pick it up?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So the character in itself, you would right away
pick it up. The man, yeah. 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 Yeah.
Okay. So you like Hal Jordan, period. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. There you go.
Are there any other characters out there that you specifically would run to the store to pick up?
The way my mind's been working lately as far as comics that I have to, that I want to read or comics that I'm always buying, lately the characters and the creators have pretty much gone hand in hand over the past couple years. I mean, I could say Teen Titans, but Geoff Johns has been the writer on that. So, you know, it's one or the other, I guess, there. But, you know, I'm not buying Batman every month. I buy Wolverine, which I like. Actually, The Punisher. Punisher is the only book that I've been buying. After that whole Angels and Devils and Spirit World with I think it was Christopher Golden wrote it. He was a co-writer, and I think Snegoski was the other writer, but the art was by Bernie Wrightson. I didn't read that many, but after that, the Welcome Back Franks, the two 12-issue runs with Ennis and Dillon, and now then the Marvel Knights ongoing, and now the Max ongoing since like 2001 or 02, whenever that gritty and realistic run for the Punisher started. That's the character I've been following the longest, I think, over the past few years.
The good old Punisher.
Yes, yes. And now I think, as far as characters that I'm getting back into, I'd say Captain America, which you can kind of chalk up to Ed Brubaker. So now it's like, okay, well, is it the character that I'm really enjoying, or is it because this creator is breathing new life into him, and he's the reason why I want to read this character?
Well, Amy, how about you? I mean, what specific characters are you running out there to buy?
Batman, but not every appearance of him. Like, I don't get the Batman Secrets and the Legends. I tend to get Detective Comics and Batman, and I have to get those pretty much religiously when they come out. I'm also trying to hunt down as many comics with Barbara Gordon in as well, because whenever she's in, like, she goes over to a different comic book, I'm first to find out, because I'm a big fan of Barbara Gordon. And Catwoman. Even though I'm not really liking what's going on at the moment, I still haven't got into the swing of it until the most latest issue, where she puts the costume back on. But I wasn't really getting into the swing of it, but it's still Selena Kyle to me, and she's still one of my favourites.
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned the quote-unquote change, as it were, because, well, have you ever started picking up a book because of an event specifically? I mean, I I never picked up Catwoman before 1 year later, and I gave it a shot to see how much the book had changed, to see whether it was going to catch my interest now, as opposed to, you know, early on, where it didn't really do that.
Actually, I think the only book that I really picked up, other than new books starting up, would be the Brubaker run of Daredevil.
Okay.
Because it seemed like a good jumping on point, because I heard it on like the CGS podcast, and I picked it up, and that kind of really swayed me in liking Brubaker's writing, because I hadn't really read much and I wasn't too keen on it of what I had read before.
And by the way, you mentioned that you're a Batman fan. Have you picked up Batman Year 100 yet?
Year 100, yes,
yeah.
I have. Paul Pope.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure you picked that up, because that is one of the best Batman I've read in years.
Personally, my own opinion, I love the writing of it, but I didn't like the artwork.
Okay.
The writing I thought was amazing, but it's just the artwork didn't do it for me.
I can see that. He's got a bit of an abstract style, so
yeah.
If you're not really into the abstract, then it might not be for you. But, David, I know that you've been picking up some books lately that, you know, because of Civil War and stuff like that. Would you say that you've been picking up books because of events?
I'm not really picking up anything, with the exception of Frontline,
okay,
which is basically just as far as I'm concerned, still part of the Civil War miniseries. I don't consider that a because it's definitely not an ongoing. The only thing I can really think of would probably be 52, but that's I still see that though as an extension of Infinite Crisis. So it's just it was a 7 month and 1 year long miniseries, as far as I can tell.
7 month and 1 year long.
Miniseries.
Doesn't sound nearly as good as 52.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, especially if you conclude Infinite Crisis with those 52 issues. But I'm even trying to think back to, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths and you know, well, Infinity Gauntlet really didn't have anything coming out of it. I mean, the Age of Apocalypse with the X-Men, it really hasn't been anything that, you know, from, like, DC will do that more often than Marvel with, like, you know, exploding from the pages of fill in the blank with the latest crossover event. You know, now we have Martian Manhunter or Checkmate or OMAC, and none of them have caused me to put them on my pull list or run to the comic shop. I was trying to think of the DC character aside from Green Lantern or Hal Jordan, and it is Green Arrow. Green Arrow is since the Kevin Smith run, and even before then, even I mean, basically the two characters that I loved reading in the 80s were Green Lantern and Green Arrow, so those are pretty much the same two. So I guess on the DC side, you got the two heroes in green, and then you got the Punisher on the Marvel side. And like Amy said with Daredevil, although I have to blame Chris Neisman with Around Comics, and he twisted my arm and put the gun to my head to get the first four issues of the Brubaker run, and I'm still cursing him out to this day because I'm really loving this series.
Well, welcome to the fold, my friend.
Yeah, man, damn.
Oh man, that's I told him he just.
I'm gonna either send him the email address to my LCS so he can just forward the shop owner his pull list for me, or I'll just prepay for a package, just a parcel to have him send his comics that he thinks I should read right to me. This way, it just makes everybody's life
Chris
easier.
Chris is evil for that. Every he really time is, I speak man. To him, it's you should be reading this, Amy, and this, and keep a little silver notebook where I write most of my comic information in that I like over here and that. And it's just full of Tarp says.
Well, we know this much. We're huge fans of comics podcasts, but they take a lot of money out of us.
Yes, they do. Yes, they. I mean, you know,
starving student.
Oh, yeah.
The publisher should be doing half a good a job as shows like Around Comics and the other guys are doing. I mean, they really. I mean, no one's making me force. Marvel and DC hasn't had me spend this much money since before podcasts.
Well, you know what? Honestly, if anybody wants to start up a thread on our forums about, you know, what they bought because of us and how much money we owe them, we'll be more than happy to see exactly how much we've got so far. Because that's how we know that we're successful. If we're getting you to buy the books, then hell, you know? That's better than nothing, you know?
This is true.
Definitely, without a doubt. Now, you mentioned, I mean, obviously we did mention writing, and we mentioned art being a reason for us to stop picking it up. If it's a writer that you love, but an artist that you despise, will it take you away from the book?
No.
No, okay. All right, so, in other words, you'll sit through the bad artwork. Well, what if it's artwork that's so bad that you literally cannot read what's on the page?
Well, I've just figured that the word balloons would still be fine, so as long as I can read them, I'm fine, because predominantly I write plays. That's what my major is when I'm working in theatre. So it's all about the dialogue to me and the writing. That's why I love it so much, because it's kind of like reading the play with pictures.
Okay. I can actually sort of see that, because, well, obviously you've got... That's what comics are, they're storyboards. You know? And, you know, the fact that those storyboards are there, it makes it easier for your mind to sort of get a picture of exactly what's going on and when. So I can sort of see where you're coming from with that. Well, David, what about you? I mean, has there been a moment where the art's just gotten so bad where you're like, you know what, I love you, insert writer here, but I'm going to have to skip this?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think if there's ever been a time where... Because, first of all, I hate to have... I bought the Rob Liefeld issues that Gail Simone wrote of Teen Titans.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
I've got those, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't want to see a gaping hole in my collection, an issue or two, regardless of, you know, what was the reason why? Why'd I go from one through whatever, and then I picked it up two or three issues later again? I don't want to see that hole. And I've read a lot of independent comics from the 80s where the art was never that great. It was not as great as others. So, you know, I've had my share of working my way through bad art or art that didn't fit the story, and the writing, if it's a character, there's something in there that had me buy it. So I'm never going to go and say that, God, this is awful, I don't want anything to do with this. No, nothing's really ever taken me away from buying a book because of one creator or the other.
Something that got me really close is when I was first getting into comics, Sandman was like, Neil Gaiman's Sandman was like the second, third book I started reading. And some of the issues in the volumes, it got very difficult for me. And I was just like, the writing's so good and the plot's so good, but it's just getting over that artwork and just trying to get through to the other side. It's worth it, so...
Well, that's good.
Well, yeah. And you know what? Honestly, David, you're a stronger man than I when it comes to those Gail Simone Liefeld issues, because I picked up the first one. I couldn't read it. I seriously couldn't. I sat down there. I tried my hardest. I really, really did, because I love Gail Simone. I love basically everything she's put out ever since she was with Marvel. And I couldn't do it. And I'm not quite sure whether it was the Liefeld artwork that was affecting me, but I also felt it wasn't Gail Simone's strongest work.
No, it definitely wasn't. I mean, the little that I've read of her work, it definitely wasn't. And I don't know if that was, if she wrote it and then Liefeld drew it, if she had the idea and then Liefeld ran with it and then she wrote it based on the artwork like they do with Marvel. I don't know what, I mean, it wasn't even a Teen Titans issue.
Yeah.
It really wasn't a story for them at all.
It was
I don't know who the hell. So you could have had that like be a 64-page one shot, because it sold. It sold really well. So you can't tell me that no one would have bought a one shot of it.
The first issue sold. The second issue, major drop off.
Okay, so then we should have told them right there. Then maybe we should have just packaged this as a one shot special. Maybe have the monthly Teen Titans book maybe tie into it. Hey, if you really want to read the end of this, even though I hate that at times, but, you know, make that issue of the Titans self-contained and, you know, a little plot line going off. And you know, hey, if you want to finish this story, read the Gail Simone Rob Liefeld special. And then, you know, they'll make the big money on that special one-shot issue. Everybody will have a complete story. And there you go. You know, bring Stephen Platt out of retirement or whatever the hell he's doing. Get him away from the Fry Machine. You know, just... You could have done about it different ways. I mean, we're getting off the topic, but I mean, it wasn't a great Teen Titans issue. It wasn't her best work. Yeah. It wasn't his best work. It was sad all around, but I still have it. So obviously it doesn't matter who's going to write it, who's going to draw it, or who's going to be in it eventually. You know, I'm still a sucker for it.
Well, again, that also sort of says that you're a Teen Titans fan also. And I mean, obviously you're a Gail Simone fan also, but the fact that it was a Teen Titans issue and the fact that you didn't want to call in your run, that's why I picked it up.
And the same thing could be said for, because now I'm thinking about it, series that were canceled, Harley Quinn.
Okay.
I have every issue of that Harley Quinn series up until the very, very bitter end. I mean, it started off great with Carl Kessel writing and the Terry and Rachel Dotson art. And that first year or so was phenomenal. And then it went off on some weird tangent. And that last issue, I'm still trying to scratch it out of my memory.
I remember because I got the Teen Titans issue when Rob Liefeld issues when I was just going through, and it's like Teen Titans, I'll grab all of those. And it was just, I remember entering him into my database and thinking, that can't be Gail Simone, because it was just so different to the Birds of Prey, which I was loving. And it was just like, and I had to check like 3 times because I was just.
That's basically how I felt. I felt she was writing it for his artwork, which, by the way, is understandable because a lot of the times, you know, obviously she can't write exactly the same as she would if, say, you know, she was working with Ed Dennis as she would with Rob Liefeld, because they have different talents. But she was certainly writing that issue for Rob Liefeld's style. And, again, there are Rob Liefeld fans out there. I'm not saying there aren't, because obviously that issue really did sell. But for me, it's not there. And I don't want to go off on a Liefeld tangent, because that seems to be the only thing I do, and I want to stop that from happening. But nevertheless, there will be times when the artist takes away from the writer for me. And then again, there are times when the artist brings me onto the book. And I'll say an example right here, Uncanny X-Men. When Alan Davis was doing Uncanny X-Men, I picked those issues up. I was not liking what Claremont was doing, but I felt Alan Davis sort of revitalized Chris Claremont, and I wanted to pick those issues up month after month.
Those Uncanny X-Men issues, if you were to read them without word balloons, they would be the most beautiful X-Men comics ever.
Yeah.
But the fact that Claremont wrote them, because I have them as well, and Alan Davis brought me back to Uncanny. Okay. There are three creators that I can always spout off that I will always follow. Alan Davis is one, Matt Wagner is another, and Christopher Priest is the third.
Okay.
Whatever they're going to be doing, I'm going to be there. And so my question to you two, which creators will you follow to the end of the earth?
Ooh, that, you know what? Amy, you want to go first here? Because I got to think about that for a minute.
See, I'm so fickle because there's none that I'd follow to the end of the earth, but Ellis would come very close. I don't read any of his like Marvel stuff, but when it comes to things like Desolation Jones, Fell, and those sort of books, I'm right there. Alan Moore, I tend to pick up a lot of his books, especially things like Promethea that are along my lines. But I'm so fickle, there's none I'd follow to the end of the earth.
Will you be picking up Lost Girls?
I'm in big debate over that due to the moral issues behind it.
Okay.
Because of the Great Ormond Street Hospital. If I knew that there was some sort of donation going because of the use of Wendy, then yes, I would.
Okay.
I've got my own moral issues there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But you know what, honestly, now that I've been thinking about it, Bill Willingham.
Yeah?
Bill Willingham, you know what? Because I've realized, like, now that I think about it, I picked up Robin because of him. I picked up Fables because of him. I'm still picking up Shadow Pack, which he's doing now, and I'm realizing I'm going to be picking up his Jack spinoff of Fables, because, again, I love Fables, and I love Bill Willingham. And I'm realizing now, like, a lot of his stuff I have in my collection, and it didn't hit me until this very moment.
What about his Elementals work?
His Elementals, I'm still trying to find that, honestly, because it's kind of hard to find in my neighborhood. But
yes, it is.
I'd really love to pick that up in a trade or something.
I don't know if you're going to find it in a trade. Okay. I think eBay may be your friend where that goes.
Well, eBay's always my friend, so I'm going to have to take a look over there. But at least for his modern work, let's put it that way, the stuff that he's currently doing, I know that from the point that I started reading Bill Willingham and seeing his artwork, I knew I was going to follow Bill Willingham to the end of the earth.
Okay.
Other guys that I think about, again, didn't notice it until you asked the question. I'm glad you did, because, like, I'm thinking about it now. You know what? Kurt Busiek.
Okay.
Because there
Astro City Avengers.
Astro City
Fantastic
Avengers.
Four.
JOA Avengers was...
Right.
Oh, my God. I can read that over and over again. It is one of the best things I've ever read in my life. JOA Avengers. That is the comic book fan's dream right there. You know, how many years in the making was that? At least like 15 years, right? With Perez.
It's over 20. Wait, the late mid to late 80s, I think. So yeah, we're getting about the 20-year mark.
Okay.
I've been looking at that. They've got two huge. I think they're kind of absolute editions.
Yeah.
They've got them in the comic book store I go to, and every time I go there, they're sat there, and I'm so tempted to take them home, but I don't know if my budget can stretch to it, especially this month with going to London for a week.
Well, enjoy your stay. Well, let's see. And what else? We'll see Superman so far that he's been collaborating with Geoff Johns. And Geoff Johns is another guy I'm going to have to say also, because he's Geoff Johns. I'm sorry, but this guy, again, there might be a small little stinker in there every now and then, but that's like one or two issues. Every other thing he's done has been comic book gold. And
I have to say that I don't read all of his work, but what I do read, I love. And it's even when you're reading 52, which is like a collaboration, can tell which lines are his.
Oh, yeah.
So brilliant when you're like reading a bit of Black Adam and you just know that that's Geoff Johns' work.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Is JSA Johns' best work?
Ooh.
Because I have not read any issues of JSA.
You know what? It's a close second to Teen Titans.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd put Teen Titans first.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because I really like JSA, but I'm going to have to put Teen Titans on top of that.
Okay. Because and early on in the Teen Titans run, I mean, that was some fantastic work. So, okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, for you to say that, then okay.
Yeah, and also the fact that Johns, you know what? This might have something to do with the fact that Johns didn't start JSA.
That's true.
The fact that it was started by the man who is writing Batman better than anybody right now. And James Robinson, who did a great job with JSA and did a great job with Starman and all that. And he set the tone for JSA, and then Geoff Johns picked it up from there. But, you know, Geoff Johns is doing a great job with JSA, but it's more continuing what was started there.
Yeah, okay. It's holding up the quality in that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Grant Morrison. I'm going to have to say that.
You follow Grant Morrison? Okay.
Yeah, because, and again, I might upset some people out there who I know by saying the words Grant Morrison, period, but... Yeah, no, Grant Morrison, I realize I am going to pick up Wildcats because Grant Morrison is writing it. Not because Jim Lee is doing the art, but because Grant Morrison is writing it.
I'm actually picking up a book in August, I believe. So I've got my spreadsheets open for this episode.
Yeah.
Called The Boys by Vertigo.
Oh, yes, Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson.
Yes.
Exactly. And I just saw Garth Ennis and I thought... Yeah, you know, give me some more Preacher style. And then, like, the tagline is, it's going to out-preacher Preacher.
Yes.
And I'm just like, yeah, I've got to get this.
And
I think
I'm reading
up to two copies so that I can send one down to my boyfriend.
I have the first few Preacher trades, so I'm reading that in trades. I don't have, I've read an issue or two. I've read the Lobo Hitman one-shot, so I really haven't read much of his of Ennis's Hitman. Like I said, I have all his Punisher so far. I will be buying The Boys. So, I don't know. I guess possibly then we can add Ennis to my list then.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Lobo, actually, because, well, Lobo made a post on our forum, so that totally works.
Oh, then by all means.
Great tie-in.
Segway.
Yes.
he wrote, and this is in the post that we did for this topic, I follow writers to an extent, but I won't buy a comic from a writer unless I'm also interested in the character or concept. I usually won't buy a DC or Marvel Universe title unless it's a self-contained run, like Ellis's Iron Man or Next Wave. And I can sort of see that. And again, obviously, you know, he's not too big a fan of the main DC or Marvel books. You know, he seems to be more of an independent guy from what I'm reading here. But obviously, Lobo is in there as well. But
well, I'm gonna. I've been meaning to answer his post because I want to know what it is about Marvel and DC that he, if it's a self-contained story, what is it? What either pissed him off to cut him off from mainstream books long-term, or if he just figures they have enough money and they don't need his. I'm just, and you know, and there are people that, and I do agree with that to an extent that, you know, you guys already get enough people's money. I want to make sure that this independent creator gets paid. He's putting a book out that no one else is really going to ever see. I want to make sure he or she can get it out there. I'll gladly fork over some money to him because this little boy's already going to buy Spider-Man every month. Marvel doesn't need my $250. So I am curious to know why Lobo has sworn off, more or less, the mainstream books. But I do see his point big time, especially if, you know, which is what we've been talking about already. You know, like you said, Ian, with, you know, if the art is bad, will you still buy the book if you like the character or the writer? And, you know, he'll I know he's a big Warren Ellis fan, Lobo is, and like you said, he's not keen on Marvel or DC too much, so there might be some... I wonder, though, if that extends to Ellis's Iron Man run.
Well, I'm glad he's reading Next Wave, though, because that's amazing.
That is a great book.
That's hilarious, and it's just... It's total parody, which is right, yeah, up Ellis's alley, and also the art is great in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that would be a good question. So, Lobo, if you want to give us a response, that would certainly be great because we can sort of understand that. Braxton actually agrees to that. Well, he didn't actually say that he agrees, but he says this makes sense to me.
Right.
So I'm assuming he understands what he's saying there, as do we.
And but he lives down south, so, you know, you really can't.
Braxton, we love you, man. We love you.
Absolutely.
And thanks for joining us for episode 7. That was a lot of fun.
That was funny.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you kindly for that.
I'm a fan of Braxton's. and of course the show, but he said he was doing it, and I was like, yeah, I've got to get this episode the second it comes down, because I just knew you three together would be funny, and I got more weird looks on the bus again, so thanks for
we
that.
We are the Mo, Larry, and Curly of comic podcasts. Oh, boy. Anyway, let me get on here with the posts as well. We got one from Matthew Guy again. This one says, comic timing. I follow titles mostly that I personally like from DC. See my signature at the end of this post, which I will, actually, because I'll read off what he's reading. But CGS has expanded my enjoyment of great series from Marvel. Bendis through the current run on Daredevil, She-Hulk's current series, and even got me hooked on Captain America thanks to the hardcover editions and current issues. Also my first Marvel crossover, Civil War. Another major fact concerning comics is the cost of them. $2.99 usually is just too much, and only getting a 20% discount from my former mail order comic service was just not enough. I moved on to DCBS collecting titles for me starting in July with a greater 35% discount and deep discounts on special issues, so I try more titles from 12 to 20 titles and not break my comic budget with some room for 1 to 3 trades a month. Thanks for the show, Matthew Guy. And he's currently reading, according to his signature, Superman, Batman, Action Comics and Detective Comics, Flash, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Green Arrow, Checkmate, JSA Classified, 52, Daredevil, She-Hulk, and Captain America. And in the future, he's going to be reading JLA and JSA, OMAC, Civil War, and Manhunter. So that's certainly a nice list there. And also, I see in the future, there's Manhunter in there. So I guess he's going to be reading it in trade.
Or those final five issues.
Or the final five issues, exactly. And by the way, pick them up. Please pick them up. I want this to continue. I can't say that enough, and that'll be my plug for Manhunter for the episode. Thank you very much. But the fact remains that I can definitely see where he's coming there also, because with the cost of comic books, you can't pick up every issue that looks good to you.
All right.
That's right.
Which is something that I'm dealing with now, because I realized this past week I spent about $45 on comics, and I'm like, that might be a bit too much for a college student like myself.
Without my discount that I'm getting in August, it would come to £72.
Okay.
So I'm working that out in dollars, seeing as it's most probably close to over $100.
Wow. And is that for a month, or?
Yeah, that's a month.
That's a month. Yeah, I'm spending too much.
Oh, was yours a week?
Yeah, mine was a week.
But I'm a student, so I have to go through it like a fine-tooth comb and just pull out as much as I can.
But you know what? Also, the fact remains that let's put it this way. I realized I had some money left over from not spending too much of that Anime Next, and I'm like, all right, you know what? I can splurge a bit here since I only bought about two things, so that'll work. But regularly, I'll spend about $30-$35 a week, which, again, is too much, and I really need to cut that down, but there's too many books out there.
That still works out about my £20 a week, so.
Yeah, but still, I'm spending too much, I know that. Oh, boy. Anyway, let's move on to Captain Canuck here. I actually collect books based on characters more than anything else, regardless of who's on the book. 95% of what I buy is DC, which is where the Bat family resides, and I follow Moon Knight and Punisher over at Marvel. As far as writers and artists, I only really follow a few writers such as Geoff Johns, Garth Ennis, Greg Rucka, and Judd Winnick. For artists, I don't seek out specific artists at all, as to me, the writing of a book is much more important, so I never would purchase a book just because a specific art team is on it. So basically, I just enjoy the stories regardless of who is involved, and the writer and artist have little bearing if I pick a book or not, and there is the gratuitous dog barking for the episode. Yeah, and then David, you had a response right away to this, and this is actually a good question that you asked. Do you feel that the characters speak differently when a different writer handles them? Does Batman sound like Batman when Morrison writes him after Winnick? Sticking with Batman, can you detect a different feeling when Frank Miller, yes you can, Doug Mensch, Max Allen Collins, Jim Starlin, or Mike W. Barr writes a character? They can all write the same story differently, but when you read what Batman is saying, have you ever said, that doesn't sound like Batman? He then responded, I definitely agree a character's actions and personality changes based on each writer's different styles to a point. Batman has a few golden rules that I'm sure DC sets down before anyone starts on a book, so much of the time it doesn't get out of hand. I notice differences between writers, but they don't bother me, as each writer will obviously have their own take, but I do enjoy some more than others. And that's a pretty good point right there, and I'm glad you brought that up, David. I mean, every writer is going to sound a bit different than the next. On any character that they do, no matter what happens. I mean, do you like one writer's specific voice for a character more than another's?
Do I? Yes, because I think that there's some characters, some mainstream characters that creators are pretty much born to write. The only non Matt Wagner creation that Matt Wagner seems to have been born to write or draw is Batman.
Okay.
He does a phenomenal Batman from Batman Grendel to the Faces three-parter in Legends of the Dark Knight back in the 90s, which was Batman and Two-Face, to Trinity, to now with most recently with Batman and the Monster Men, and now next in August, Batman and the Mad Monk. He seems to do better with a younger Bruce Wayne within the first couple of years of being Batman, style Batman, but I think he does a great job of not just drawing Batman in his element, but writing this character, writing this, you know, aloof and elusive millionaire playboy who's, you know, 'cause Batman doesn't speak much, so really after hearing you read off the question that I asked, you know, Batman may not have been the best of comic characters to bring up because he doesn't speak much outside of, like, you know, the Justice League or other heroes. You know, he's not going to hold a conversation with, you know, the guy down at the corner bodega.
I'm the goddamn Batman.
There you go. You know, well, yeah, except when he's scolding Robin. But yeah, I definitely know that there are different feelings when creators take over a character, and there are some, like I said, there are just some creators that just handle characters a certain way. I think John Romita Jr. is a fantastic Spider-Man artist, especially Spider-Man circa the late 80s, like around Amazing, or mid 80s, Amazing Spider-Man, you know, 225, 230, 232, things like that, where Spider-Man versus the Juggernaut, I think that was a great looking Spider-Man for that time. I'm not real comparing Spider-Man from the 80s to today. I'm more of a fan of the old school Spidey, but there are some creators that should just draw or write certain characters, I think.
Okay.
I cut off Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you're saying about Batman not being a good example to use, I think it's a great example to use because, like you said, Batman isn't the talkative type. And if you get a writer who's going to fill a Batman story with dialogue, it's not going to sound right.
Leave it to the writer to show me I was wrong. Thank you.
Well, you know what? Honestly, if I sat down and read a Batman book and I heard him, like, describing every little thing he's about to do, I would I'd rip my hair out. You know, if he was on the page going, I'm going to jump from rooftop to rooftop until I find Two-Face, and as soon as I find Two-Face, I'm going to do this to him, and then I'm going to do this to them, and this to him, and I'm going to find Jim Gordon, and we're going to have a long conversation. I'd be like, why the hell are you saying all this? You're about to do it on the page.
Okay.
You know, I need my Batman to be the strong, silent type, and when he does say something, be a nice little quip. You know, something that makes sense.
I stand corrected. So we'll edit out what I said about Batman not being proper, and like Amy said, that was the perfect example.
Well, all right. You know what? To each their own, man. To each their own. Let's put it that way. But again, I just like just for me at least. I mean, Batman. He is a detective, so let's put it this way. If he's if he's actually, like, saying out loud, like, what he's trying to decode, as it were, in a case, that's one thing. But if he's, you know, stating the obvious, that's when I get annoyed.
Right. And as understandable.
All right. Moving on here to Anubis. And Anubis who has a very nice Nightwing icon on the forums. He says, I mainly buy the comics of characters slash teams I like foremost, but it is true what David said earlier about the writer and the voice it can give a character. For example, I'm a huge Nightwing fan, and the One Year Later by Bruce Jones just doesn't seem like Dick Grayson slash Nightwing at all, so it is a book that I'm dropping, even though I have pretty much 98% full run of the series. But I have picked up a comic recently based on an artist I recently picked up 1 year later, Green Arrow, because of Scott McDaniels being the artist on the book. Mind you, I'm a Green Arrow fan, but I had not been reading recently, but Winnick's writing with McDaniels' art has me hooked on the book now. Also, what about the influence of the forums? I have picked up a lot from recommendations from the forums and podcasts, which I think is great because I have tried some titles I would have never tried previously, so I think they might be an extra part to the question, which we have covered, because again, without podcasts, we wouldn't be listening to we wouldn't be reading three quarters of the things that we are reading. And there you go with that. But I'm glad he did mention the Bruce Jones run of Nightwing, because I know some people do have some qualms about that.
Right.
I mean, Amy, yeah. You definitely groaned when he mentioned that.
Yeah, it's kind of true. It's not Nightwing, and For all I know, it could be leading somewhere. This is why I'm hanging on, hoping that it's leading somewhere and we find out what is with this huge change in character and style and everything. And for a start, why he isn't with Babs.
I still cannot wait to find out. You know, they better reveal that in 1 year later, because if they just leave that hanging
there, it's driving me mad.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like Nightwing. And it's like, I know I should blame the writer, but in a way I want to blame the character and put my page through the comic book and just slap Nightwing silly and say, talk properly.
Well, and then on the other side of the street in New York, you could, over with Marvel, you could say that some of the people really, because I think, actually, yeah, I could say from experience, I did drop Fantastic Four after Straczynski got on it. The first couple issues into his run with the whole, you know, tweaking of their origins, just I don't know, it's either I just felt that it'd been there, done that, or I really, really enjoyed the Mark Waid, Mike Waringo run, and I really didn't want something like this to come after it, but I dropped. So yeah, I mean, I do like the Fantastic Four, I like the characters, and Straczynski, I get, and I love Mike McCone. I think his art is great. I don't know if he fits Fantastic Four, but I was willing to give it a shot because of his art. And, you know, I enjoyed the few issues of the few trades of Spider-Man that I have that Straczynski wrote. I like Supreme Power, and I hope to start Squadron Supreme soon. So, you know, I do like him as a writer, but something about him on Fantastic Four just wasn't jiving with me, so I had to bounce.
Well, you know what? What I've realized, and I'm glad that we mentioned Bruce Jones and Straczynski in this, because I don't like it when writers fall into patterns. And what I've been finding about Bruce Jones is that Bruce Jones loves going onto a book and suddenly making a major shift in the character's tone. I'll give an example here. With Hulk, in the first couple of issues, it sort of worked, like giving that whole Zen Buddhist side of Bruce Banner, you know, trying to control the Hulk, as it were, and, you know, trying to calm himself. He'd been doing that for years, but this was a different take on it. As the issues went on, however, he went off in this crazy tangent and just completely lost me, and I stopped picking up the book. Straczynski, he really loves changing the origins of characters that he hasn't originally created. And you can see that on Supreme Power. It works with Supreme Power because, you know, Squadron Supreme were a very different group of people before he came onto the book. This is an entirely different Squadron Supreme. When he did Spider-Man, he changed the origin of Spider-Man. And now when he's on Fantastic Four, he tries to tweak the Fantastic Four's origin. This is a pattern here. And again, when you're a writer, you don't need to make major changes on a book every single time you come on. And when they seem to do it, when Bruce Jones does it, when Straczynski does it, it doesn't always turn out as planned.
It doesn't seem that way. I mean, even though people are still sticking with Nightwing, like you two were saying, I've heard Sean at Raging Bullets mentioned it a while back. You know, it doesn't feel like, you know, you just don't know where it's really going. You know, it doesn't sound like too many people are jumping off of that book, but I haven't checked the numbers for Fantastic Four after Straczynski jumped on, so I'm not sure, you know, if people are still riding that out, if they just want to continue their FF run. But, yeah, that's pretty much, I think, the only book that I've just dropped. Well, that and uncanny once Alan Davis left. I mean, as much as I like Chris Bacalo's art, you know, I just reading that comic, it just I couldn't justify that. That's $2.99 could have won elsewhere.
Isn't it amusing how Chris Bacalo seems to put out better artwork when he's rushed?
You think?
I'm really thinking that because.
Okay.
Did you happen to pick up the Age of Apocalypse story that he did for the 10th anniversary of Age of Apocalypse?
Oh, no, okay. No, I didn't.
All right. You read the first couple of issues, and it's all over the place. The art is very, very abstract to the point where you can barely actually see anything that's on the page. Like, it's so Picasso-esque. It's crazy. Eventually, they started rushing him because he was running behind schedule. There were about 7 anchors on the book, and you could see everything that he was doing. It was a complete change in shift, and I liked it. It was absolutely crazy because, again, he was sort of rushed on Uncanny. He was put on there as a replacement at the last second, and I like what he did on Uncanny. But when he actually has the time to sit down there and he overthinks his artwork, at least this is for me, it doesn't come out nearly as good, and I'm not going to pick that book up. So, you know, what do you buy? I'm probably not going to buy a Bacalo book unless I actually, you know, thumb through it and it actually looks somewhat decent. Most of his regular stuff I really haven't liked.
Okay.
To each their own. And this one here from Miskatonic, who's the first time he's actually submitted to the Comic Timing forums. I buy comics month in and month out based on the characters/concepts. I will try a book if I have not heard about it. Hard to do with the internet what it is today, based on the cover or interior art, but that does not usually last long. Ghibli's Batman and Superman runs are my latest forays into collecting this way. Avengers and X-Men I will purchase regardless of who is writing/drawing it, bitching at the stuff I don't like, but continuing my run regardless. And I guess that goes in the camp of you picking up the Teen Titans with Liefeld, but again,
I feel just like people say, you know, well, you can't, don't complain about something if you didn't vote. Don't complain about the president if your guy lost and you didn't vote for him. You can't complain. They say, you know, why are you going to bitch about this comic book? You know, don't buy it. Don't buy it to read it. I'm voting with my wallet. I did buy it, so I think I have the right to bitch about it. If I want to complain about the art or if I want to complain about the writing for some reason, I'm going to do it. I spent my money on it, so. You're going to hear me, or you're going to, you know, give me the second to just ramble on about it, damn it.
Yeah, go up to the guy like, I think you're wrong.
Here you go, you know, I spent my money on it. I have a minute to, you know, I'm going to stand on my soapbox for as long as I can while I have the money spent on this. But no, if you don't like it, you can feel free to drop it. But I do agree with Ed here where, you know, he wants to complete his runs, and plenty of people do. You have people that, you know, have complete Daredevil runs or Flash runs or, you know, Spidey runs and Avengers or JLA. So, I mean, you know, they're going to be with it through the highs and lows. And I wish, you know, you'd like a comic to continually always be great year in, year out, month in, month out. But that's not going to happen. Things change. People leave companies. People, you know, die. But what are you going to do? So, no, I do like Ed said, it is hard to find out about a book you haven't read. I try to do that. I'll flip through previews, and if something just catches my eye, I'll pick it up. Maybe I'll order it, which I have to buy because the shop I go to doesn't really give me the opportunity to flip through something. And if he's ordering an independent book out of previews, and I'm the only person ordering it, then yeah, you know, I'm buying it. But you know, he has. Ed here has his Avengers and X-Men that he's constantly buying, so I don't think any of us, though, do the three of us. Well, actually, Amy, you did say Batman and Detective, but are you buying that month in, month out, regardless?
I started picking up Detective because of the face-to-face crossover.
Okay.
And yeah, I believe that, is it J.H. Williams is going on to Detective after
yes.
this run?
Yeah.
Well, I love his work in, like, Prometheus, so yeah, I'm going to be buying it month in, month out.
So we all said that we tend to, we're more partial to characters over creators, but do any of us have a full run or a continuous run of any particular title?
Spider-Girl.
Okay.
I have every single issue of Spider-Girl, and you know what? Honestly, it's a combination with that one, because DeFalco has been writing that since it started. There has not been, I think there might have been one random issue in the middle of it that he might not have done, but I'm not entirely sure about that. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he's actually done a complete run of Spider-Girl, and it's because I love Spider-Girl, the character, and because I'm a huge DeFalco fan, and I think he doesn't get enough love.
Well, he doesn't get enough love because I think he lost a lot of love in the early 90s when he was editor-in-chief.
Understand.
He was the transitional EIC between Shooter and Harris.
Yeah.
And I think Harris should have... Any dislike over DeFalco, I think, should have just been given to Harris just by default. I don't think Harris made a great... Bob Harris was not one of their one of the bright spots in the editor-in-chief timeline. But no, you're right. DeFalco nowadays... Because I think he writes in a very old-school frame of mind. Because I remember his Fantastic Four run with Paul Ryan after Byrne left. And it wasn't exactly Fantastic Four's golden era, but I think Spider-Girl actually Spider-Girl's his baby. It sounds like, you know, there's a lot of love he has for this character and for this comic book, and from what you always tell me about it seems to show.
Yeah, and well, you know what, also what I like about him also is the fact that he's very open to you know, like listener suggestions, to readers and all that. He's very, very open to talking to people on forums, and, you know, he's the type of guy who's very, very approachable, and in that, I found myself, you know, wanting to read more and more of his stuff. So if I see DeFalco's name on it, I'm probably going to end up picking it up, whether it's Spider-Girl or whether it's otherwise. So if he does stuff after Spider-Girl, I'll be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Closest I've got to a run is the current Teen Titans, apart from, I think it's issue 24 I started picking it up in singles, so everything before that's in trades.
Okay.
Every single issue of the current Teen Titans run, except for the second part of the Liefeld.
Have you even got that?
And again, I'm one of these days, you'll see me running to the shop like, alright, I give up, I need that part of my other run, you know? But for now, I'm happy not picking that issue up. But eventually, someday, you know, if I want a complete run of that, I might be running to the store to pick it up.
I don't think you'll have to run to it. I'm pretty sure you can find it. You know what? If I find it at a quarter bin at any convention I'm at, I'll send it to you.
There you go. Voila. And by the way, I need to mention it here, by the way. Webhead on the forums was nice enough to send me the Free Comic Book Day edition of X-Men Runaways that came out, and
oh, nice.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I picked it up it came to my door about a week or so ago, and I definitely want to thank him for that, because I've been looking everywhere for it, and really couldn't find it anywhere in my area, so he sent it over, and thank you for that. And we're still working on a contest, we're still working on that, because we haven't gotten the posters yet, and also David and I really haven't had a chance to talk it over, but once we do actually have something firm, probably by next episode, we'll have something firm on that, and we'll let everybody know about that. But anyway, just needed to put that in quickly there. I'm trying to think. Any other complete runs? Does Runaways... Yeah, you know what? Runaways counts, because I've been following that all the way through. From Volume 1 to Volume 2. But again, that's always been Brian K. Vaughan. So, I follow Brian K. Vaughan at basically anywhere, too. So,
I think my runs have been... I have 28 to... Because I haven't been able to get to White Plains in the past couple months, so most of my runs end a few months ago. 100 Bullets, 28 to 70, so I'm still trying to get the first 27 issues of that. Astonishing X-Men so far, and the latest Captain America I have. I have the full run of the Fantastic Four with the Wade and Waringo run, and Green Arrow up to issue 60, and all the Punishers from Garth Ennis on, the Outsiders, well, Supreme Power, which will now be Squadron Supreme, Teen Titans, and I think that's oh, and the Ultimates, I think, are really the only ones that I just have to. I have the full run of the Losers. I have the full run of the Harley Quinn.
Glad you mentioned the Ultimates.
There are a couple of books that I have.
Glad you mentioned the Ultimates, because I just remembered I have every single issue of Ultimate Spider-Man. From the first until now, every single issue
Good
of
show.
Ultimate Spider-Man, I've been there picking it up. I actually have a CGC graded 9.6 Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 that nice. Is just sitting there, you know, on my shelf. I'm not touching it. It's just going to stay there, you know, and hopefully that'll be worth something in a couple of years when, you know, not everybody has one. But again, everybody has the CGC. It seems like everybody rented a store and right away got that CGC graded, but it's still sitting there. And I think I've got everything from Ultimate X-Men and everything from Ultimates. So basically anything Ultimate except for that one fake Batman and Robin they did, which was absolutely horrible.
Oh, is that Ultimate Adventures or something?
Yeah,
that
was dreadful, and I didn't even pick up an issue. But actually, you know what? I picked up the first
issue. What about Ultimate Fantastic Four?
I had that, yeah. Ultimate Fantastic Four, okay. I definitely have. Because, again, Warren Ellis was on it.
Right. I have the first 12 of that, and I think I'm going to go back on it when Casey and Pasquale Ferry does the art in next month or in August.
And the best example of what you mentioned earlier, David, about picking things up regardless of who's writing it, I have every issue of Exiles.
Okay.
And even through the Austin run, I had to say that. I'm sorry, but his Exiles
well, you
wasn't
know, there's,
too bad, I guess.
There's someone out there that has a complete run of Superman, and that includes the Austin issues.
Yeah, that's true. And if you do have a complete run of Superman, spread the wealth, my friend. You're going to be rich someday.
Now, I do want to just, if as a final thought, so if anybody wants to answer this later, should creators overshadow the characters? Amy?
No.
Okay.
No. Definitely not, because you know what? When the creators overshadow the characters, you're bound to be disappointed.
Personally, I feel if the creators overshadow the characters, then they're not doing their job right.
Yeah. I would agree with
that. Because, you know, if they're doing their job right, then the character is the best it could be. Otherwise, they're just not doing
it
right.
It's that whole behind-the-scenes thing. You know, it's the person that... If something is going right, then that means their job is being done right. If you don't know they're there, then they're doing everything right. It's the person behind the scenes. And if the character is... the character cannot be secondary to especially in their own book. I mean, you know, it's not going to be John Romita Jr. Spider-Man. You know, it shouldn't be. Yeah, okay, it's great that he's doing the art on it when he is, but it's still Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man that, you know, should be Spider-Man that is having the people buy the comic.
Well, you know what? That's one of the reasons why I've been let down by a couple of the most recent creator shifts, as they were, because they hyped them, and then you sit down, you read it, and you're like, okay, where's my character? You know?
Yeah.
I can understand, you know, that they're trying to use their own style in it, but where's the character I came to read? And I guess we could say, you know, the Bruce Jones example there, I mean, obviously, All-Star Batman definitely needs to be an example there, because everybody was hyping to the moon. Oh my God, Jim Lee and the man, the myth, the legend, Frank Miller on the same title. Wow, this is going to be great. This is going to be fantastic. I read it and I was so very disappointed. And, you know, let the character run the book, not the other way around.
Especially a character like Batman has been around. I mean, granted, yeah, the All-Star universe is supposed to be, you know, not so continuity-laden and heavy with what's gone on in the past.
It's still
it's
Batman.
New, but it's still Batman. It's still a character that should be able to write itself.
Yeah. And I wanted to get one more question out there to you guys, actually.
Sure.
How often when either thumbing through previews or going online and, you know, finding the coming attractions on, you know, comic book resources or Newsarama, do you find a comic and basically only from the description and the cover alone do you pick it up?
Quite a bit.
Okay.
I don't know if I go by the description. If it helps if I know who's going to be on it, because it may also determine when I'm going to read it, but the cover really, I don't think I've ever judged a comic book by its cover. So because how often does a Tim Bradstreet cover on The Punisher really happen inside the comic?
Oh God, that's one of my largest pet peeves, when the cover has nothing to do with the inside.
So I never go by the cover. If you know, I try to avoid spoilers, so like I really don't read the description too often, like unless I know that it's, you know, the chapter 3 of 7 or something like that in bold letters, I can get a gist from that, but, you know, I don't want to know, you know, surprise guest villain, and then they actually tell you who it is, so, well, what the hell was the surprise
yeah.
for? I really don't read descriptions too much, even in previews or in, the only time I really do in previews is, like, for an independent book so I can get more info out
yeah.
of it, but if it's for a mainstream title or especially a book that I'm already reading, then no, I don't bother with the description.
Isn't it always great when you pick up an X-Men title and you see all these characters on the cover and, like, two of them are in the actual book?
Yes.
Oh, God, I hate that so much. Because there have been times that I picked up an issue thinking, oh, wow, Nightcrawler's going to be in this, and it's like a rogue...
Psych.
It's a rogue spotlight issue, and I'm like, what the hell?
It's Nightcrawler, but it was Mystique.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Well, you know what? I think this might be a good point to wrap things up, actually, because we're trying to make the episodes a bit shorter for now, at least. I mean, obviously, when warranted, we'll run a bit over. But for those of you who are listening on CDs, we'll throw you a bone this week. Cause,
like my dad.
Yes, exactly. Let's give a shout-out to David's dad and say hello, Mr. Price. How are you? But anyway... Once again, Amy, it's been an absolute pleasure hearing your voice again.
Thanks for having me again.
You're quite welcome.
For being here.
This makes up for the one episode that is forever lost in time, so...
The forever lost episode.
Yes, exactly, which is lost to somewhere deep inside the crevices of my computer, so... Now, a couple of announcements I have for you guys. Well, first of all, as of this episode, we're officially an affiliate of The Furnace over at LordShaper.com. Lord Shaper is a member of the CGS forums, and he contacted me that he was going to add an ad for Comic Timing onto his site, and I'm like, well, hell, let's go the whole nine yards and become an affiliate. So if you go to his site and you look under affiliates, there's a nice little Comic Timing banner on there, and we added a banner to The Furnace onto the main page of Comic Timing. So thank you very much to Lord Shaper. And once again, that's at lordshaper.com, LordShaper.com. You'll be able to find that over there. And as always, we are members of the Comics Podcast Network, which you can find over at comicspodcasts.com. That's S's at the end of both of those, Comics Podcasts. And thank you guys for downloading. That much we definitely need to say. We have been surprised beyond surprised about how many people who have been downloading this off the bat. And I gotta say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, the fact that you guys want to hear me talk and that you want to hear David talk and you want to hear our guest talk, that makes us very, very happy. Because, again, we talk forever, don't we, David?
Just about.
It's hard to shut us up, so...
It seems that way.
Yeah. So I want to thank you guys definitely for listening every single week, and we should be more regular as of this week. In fact, we might try and squeeze out a second one this week. If not, then...
On that, you said that, and it
can happen. Well, thank you very much there, my friend. But nevertheless, we believe next episode is going to be entirely... We're changing the name of By a Trade of Quarterman, because it doesn't roll off the tongue. Let's put it that way. When I say it, but you know, it just is a tongue twister. So we're going to be changing that. And David, let everybody know what we're calling it now, because I'm blank.
I think we decided on Bag and Board.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. So as of now, next episode is going to be entirely Bag and Board it for us. We might have a guest on, we might not. It depends on whether we're actually going to just do two of us, but probably just be the two of us, just talking about some books we've read and whether you guys should put it away or whether you should throw it out. And that's the way that works. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. And don't forget to vote for us on Podcast Alley. Podcast Alley is a very nice place, and we actually have it very convenient, thanks to David, on the top of the Comic Timing forums over at the Comic Geek Speak forums. We have a nice little posted on the top where you can vote for basically any single comic-related podcast you can think of, and my podcast, Geek Speak, but they're all on there as well. And I'm trying to think, anything else that I'm forgetting? Oh yeah, iTunes reviews. If anybody wants to write iTunes reviews, they can go on to iTunes and do so. Other than that, David, you got anything to say?
No, I think you pretty much covered it.
All right, and Amy, any shout-outs you have?
No. Everyone who wants to talk to me generally speaks to me on Skype or that, so...
Just like we're doing right now.
Yes.
Exactly.
I've been on Skype for close to 5 hours now, so...
Hey.
Oh, man. You know what? You are keeping Skype in business. That's what matters.
Yes.
And you know what? We're keeping them in business as well with Comic Timing, so that totally works. And guess what? As always, there's always Time for Comics. For David, for Amy, I'm Ian. We're out of here. Take care, everybody. We got one more here from Miss Katonic. First time she's, wait, is it a he or a she? That's from Miss Katonic here. Let's take a look. So I don't actually...
Add more.
Okay, so, yeah, let me do that again so I don't sound like a silly voice and calling him a she. Here we go.
Living in hope. I was like, is that another girl I haven't greeted?
Oh, boy.
I thought it was a guy, too. I thought it was a guy.